welcome to Begin Again Mama. I'm your host, Tia, and today I'm sitting down with Lauren, who is a birth doula, coach, and childbirth educator. She resides in Texas, where she teaches both in person and virtually to families seeking to plan birth experiences that respect the sacred initiation of motherhood and matrescence. She is so inspiring. Her online content is full of knowledge with a side of humor. I absolutely love it. Her training as a writer inspired her work in birth story processing, where she supports women as they share, heal, and learn from their own birth experiences. She believes pregnancy and birth is meant to be a period of peace and transformation for the family as a whole. Mama, we are going to sit down and talk about pregnancy and loss, and I want you to honor and hold space for yourself. If this is not a conversation that you are in a space to witness, please turn off this podcast and come back to it when you are at a place, because it is truly an inspiring story. Her way of articulating what has happened and her experience for her and her family is, it's beautiful. It's brutal and it's beautiful. So get ready to meet Lauren. Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for coming on Begin Mama. I'm really excited for this conversation today.
I am too. I love that we've connected and I can't wait to share and hear your heart and share mine.
I absolutely love it too. I feel like part of me is always like, darn it. Like, of course, I wish we didn't have this shared connection of loss. And at the same time, I have found such a strong relationship and connection to those women who have gone through it. And I'm so grateful for that at this, like, simultaneously, which can feel bittersweet, I think is the best word.
Yeah, I completely relate, especially walking through it and then being able to support friends and people you love walking through something similar. It gives you new perspective. That's unfortunate, but I'm also grateful for it.
Yeah, it's a weird place to be, I feel like.
Not a place I would choose to be, but, exactly. But I'm here. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so I'd like to just begin with, like, who's Lauren?
Yeah, I'm Lauren. I live in Texas, in Fort Worth area, with my husband and our 2.5-year-old son. And we started our family in 2022 after kind of getting married really quickly, for a short dating period, and knowing, like, we wanted a large family and lots of children, but had still a surprise pregnancy, which I put in quotes, because, and had a beautiful pregnancy and birth experience with my son at home, which kind of led me into a path of serving moms and families outside of the medical system, as we kind of grew up to know it in the obstetric system. So I, after I had my son, decided to begin to serve women in the birth space as a doula. And I really focus on out-of-hospital births. Sometimes I take a hospital birth for a friend, or, you know, like a transfer or something. But I just really have a heart and a call for family-centered birth and protecting the sacred bubble of what it means to bring life into the world. That's a little bit about me. And so, yeah, I've been doing that for a few years. And, you know, it ebbs and flows, whether I'm pregnant or postpartum or just need to prioritize mothering. But I do a lot of birth education as well. That's kind of my focus, birth coaching and education, and the occasional birth attendance.
Okay, we're going to have to do another session where you come back and talk about that side of things, because I find that so interesting. And before I had my son, and then even after, during that process of figuring out where I wanted to birth, I feel like we're not actually given all these options of what's possible.
No. Yeah.
And so now that I have broadened my mind and really my heart to what is physiological birth, like, I'm obsessed with that now too. So you have to come back on and talk about that.
I would love to. I think it's becoming more common, but it's uncommon. Your first child and pregnancy, you go that way. So I love to talk about that.
And I always wonder when things, like, feel more common for me, I'm like, are they actually common, or is this just the realm bubble. I'm surrounding myself in.
Yeah. Your own little bubble. It feels so common
because it's all in my bubble, and that's what I consume. That's what I seek out.
I totally think it's that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to move on from the birth stuff. We'll come back to that on another podcast. And then talk a little bit about your second pregnancy and your experience within that, what birth looked like, and that version of postpartum.
Okay, yeah. So after we moved to Fort Worth, we had been in Austin for the last 5 years. That's where we met and got married, my husband and I, and where my first son was born. We moved to a new city and kind of had like a full reset to our life, a new community. There's a lot of like shifting and transition and change. And I was going through some kind of questionable health things that I honestly kind of attribute back to dysregulation and high stress season coming off the end of a postpartum season. But we found out we were expecting our second baby briefly after we moved here, and we were completely ecstatic. We were open to new life and we conceived fairly quickly, and it was exciting and a blessing. But I made some interesting decisions in the beginning of that pregnancy that, in reflecting on the journey that we've walked and losing that baby, make a lot of sense in hindsight. But yeah, so I was pregnant for 13 weeks with our son, Noah. And I actually had found a local like community-based midwife in the area who was the sister to my first home birth midwife, who was a wonderful older woman who was just very, very hands-off, very chill. She made my first pregnancy experience something really, really beautiful to be supported by a wise older woman. And her sister actually lived in the new city I was in practice. So it felt like this beautiful, like God wink, or just like a nod of like handing off to the next baby, which really blessed me. And so in order to work with her, I wanted to figure out how far along I was in this pregnancy, which in my first pregnancy, I didn't even think about. It wasn't like a, let me get an early scan or track my ovulation. It was just like, I'm pregnant. This was my last period. I think I'm about this far along. And I just like walked that journey very blissfully without anxiety or fear. But this pregnancy, I wanted to make sure she was available to support me. And so I chose to get an early ultrasound, which is not something I'm really ever interested in, just for myself personally. And we went in and got a dating ultrasound, as they call it, and found out I was about 7 weeks along, which is exactly what I thought I was. So it kind of felt like a cool, why'd we do this? And in my body, I didn't really feel the desire to get that ultrasound. And I think knowing that that's how I felt about it, that deeply impacts like how your nervous system responds to it and how your baby responds to it, you know? But she was just like, well, she was very like, no pressure. You could get a scan, you couldn't. I don't care, but I'm not available after this, you know, certain month or time. So I wanted to be able to know. It was like me seeking knowledge for control or for, yeah, a sense of I can have like a control over what's going to happen. And so I got that ultrasound. I really didn't enjoy it. I didn't like the woman who performed it on me. She was like, well, while I'm here, I can kind of check out your ovaries. And she noticed I had some hormonal acne, which at the time I was a part of kind of the health stuff I mentioned. And she was like, this looks like it could be linked to this, and was kind of just naming different pathologies, basically. She just pathologized me. And of course it came out in a very loving way, like a let's dig deeper and figure out what this was. But to me, it felt like a stranger I didn't know, who was already performing a test I didn't really want, was trying to even further kind of exert authority, is what it felt like, over me. And so she was like, oh, I see that it looks like you have maybe some PCOS. And I just left that appointment like pretty angry. I was thankful to like see an image of my baby. To me, that's a miracle every time. And then on the other hand, it was like, why did I do this? Who was this woman? I didn't like her. I don't accept that label. So it was just very interesting, the emotions attached to the choices I made, which is why I share that example in early pregnancy. The rest of my pregnancy was also low emotionally. Like I felt like I had a little bit of depression, which is not something I've ever experienced before in motherhood or before or in adolescence or my life at all. And in hindsight, I think that it was around the timing that my son had passed, but I did not consciously, cognitively know it. So I just spent like weeks on the couch, mothering my two-year-old, feeling like, oh, early pregnancy so hard, just kind of falling into that victim state, to be honest, of I'm exhausted, I'm fatigued, I feel so nauseated, nothing sounds good to eat, I need to eat protein, but I can't, you know, just kind of the cycles of misery. That's what it felt like. And I felt very emotionally dull and stagnant. And I didn't even walk. It was like hard for me to show up as a mother at all, which made my emotions towards my pregnancy very difficult because I was very excited to have a baby, but I was really struggling. I was just like waiting. My husband works like kind of a Monday to Friday, 9-to-5 situation. And every day was just like, okay, it's 4 o'clock. Like he'll be home soon. So that's what that part of my pregnancy was like. When I was around 12 weeks pregnant, my family and people around us were like, when are you going to tell people like online or, you know, extended family that you're expecting? And I'm a pretty like in the context of my community and family, an alternative, like, don't tell me what to do. You know, I don't do due dates. I don't do that stuff. Like, don't ask me. I don't have to tell you anything. Like, that's just kind of my personality. And that's what it was like at that time too. So once I started feeling a little bit better and like I could be present in my day and kind of mother, I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to like share with more people that we're expecting. And that felt like my own choice and decision. So we like went out to a field on Easter Sunday and I was like, I'm wearing a pretty dress. Like, let's take some photos and share them online. Like kind of the ritual that we all do, which I love. And I was, you know, so excited to share and so many people were happy for us. And I had a lot of people messaging me, or not a lot, but I had a handful of friends or family messaging me like, I saw a photo of you recently and I just like saw your face and I knew you were pregnant. I knew you were expecting. It felt like, wow, this is like pregnancy is so beautiful and it's so spiritual and people get senses and dreams. And I have like a lot of people in our faith community that are prophetic. So they were like, oh, I just knew by looking at you, like I could just tell. And that felt sweet. And I also had a few dreams in this time period as well, where two dreams, it was almost the same dream both times, but I was giving birth to a second baby at home and it was a boy and no one was there but myself or my husband. And so I kind of was starting to, I wasn't in that space of preparing for labor yet because I was still pretty early in my pregnancy, but I was thinking about it, of course. And I kept telling my husband, I just feel like this midwife that I had chosen to kind of invite into our space, I don't think she's going to make it. I think this is going to be unassisted. Maybe we should just do this birth, just us. I feel confident and comfortable and informed to do that. And I just think it's going to go fast and I don't think she's going to make it. And then those two dreams kind of inched that suspicion forward. And so I just like accepted, like, if this goes really fast and it's just us, great. She won't be meant to be there. Like if she misses it, or maybe I just don't, like, I won't call her and that'll be fine too. Because really like what I look for in pregnancy is just a woman to connect with emotionally and, you know, connect through that experience with. So that would have been the purpose I wanted her to serve anyway. So yeah, there was lots of things going on emotionally and spiritually in the beginning of this pregnancy that stand out to me in a different way than my first pregnancy or the current pregnancy I have now. And I see a lot of those things, like the dreams, the people who are like, I had a feeling, like a deep feeling you were pregnant or expecting. And also like the not great parts, like the depressive feelings or the just like deep sadness I was feeling in that miserable early stage, that to me made a lot of how my son passed and how the pregnancy ended make sense. So a week after we kind of shared publicly we were expecting, I started spotting. And I can get into that part of my story if you want to transition to that. But I was like, oh, okay, interesting. I was, you know, texting the midwife, like, hey, this is going on. I'm not really worried or concerned, but if you have thoughts, let me know. I'm just going about my life. It was really light spotting. And I remember the morning I woke up and sat on the toilet and peed. And when I wiped, there was just like the smallest amount of bright red blood. And I immediately, like to my core, had this deep sense that I'm having a miscarriage. Like that's immediately the feeling and sense that came over me. And I texted my husband. And, but then I was like, but you know what? This could be nothing. This could literally just be, there's no way to know. So, or no way that I'm interested in finding out to know. So I think everything's fine. And I kept going for 5, 6, 7 days, kind of like, I think everything's fine. My midwife texted me a few days into it, just like, hey, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And I was like, yeah, it's still going, like, I'm still spotting. And she noticed from some photos I sent her that it was gradually increasing. And she very gently pointed that out, which is not something that I had caught up with or really acknowledged to myself. So I actually appreciated, she's just a very intuitive woman, and said it in a way that was like, hey, this is what I'm noticing. Like, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? Let me know if you want any added support. And so I went about the week spotting, wearing a panty liner. And I just kept like telling myself and my husband, like, I think everything's fine. And I think that was, I was not ready to accept what could possibly be happening until that spotting picked up to a point where it was becoming more and more noticeable, and emotionally and in my nervous system and body, I was acknowledging a deeper level of unease, I guess you could say, that was something I needed to stop and say, okay, like, go inward. What am I feeling? What am I afraid of? What could this mean? If it does mean this, how do I want to respond? And so on April 8th, which was the day of the total solar eclipse, I don't know if you remember that, in across the US, we were in like one of the zones that went completely dark, like in the middle of the day. It was really crazy. And I was FaceTiming my mom and sister, who I'm really close with, and they live a few hours away. And we were all showing each other, like through the window or through the yard, like what it looked like outside. And I had been on the couch all day because the spotting was starting to become just a tiny bit more, enough to be like, oh, is this a tiny, tiny blood clot? What's happening? And so I just was like, I want to lay flat all day. So I was like literally laying on the couch for most of the day, looking out the window. And I remember when it went totally dark outside, we had been in the middle of like talking about like, what's going on? I don't know. I'm spotting. I think it's nothing. I don't feel anything else. And I just kind of like had this sense come over me. Like, I think this baby has passed inside of me. And I think that my body's could release it today. And so I considered like driving and getting a Doppler with the midwife and listening, but I just didn't want to. Like, I didn't want to go with technology and try to find a sound that I kind of knew deep down wasn't going to be there. And I was avoiding that. And I think that was the right decision for me. So I just decided to stay home that day. And within a few hours of the eclipse passing, I began to have some cramping. And so I, you know, looked to my husband and was like, I think this is happening. We kind of just went about our evening with our 2-year-old, because in the middle of like fear or anxiety or tragedy, if you're mothering a young child, it just keeps happening. Like, it doesn't stop. And so we're getting dinner, and I really wanted soup. And so my husband was going to go pick some up, and I was like, please, please don't leave the house. Like, I really want y'all to be close. And so I had a real birth experience, something that I, before walking through a miscarriage, didn't realize it is birth. It is one and the same. Your body is releasing your baby, whether they are a few weeks old or several months old or for full term. And so I had a labor experience that felt eerily similar to my first son's birth. It was very, it came on very fast and very strong, and happened in like the same order almost as my body did the first time. And so I was in my bed laboring and laying down, and my son, my sweet son, was snuggling with me under the covers, and he could sense that I wasn't well. And he was just like rubbing me and kind of snuggling me, being with me. And there was a moment I put on some music from actually like a birth playlist I had of worship music. And my husband came in the room and was rubbing my lower back, and I was on all fours in the bed because I was having surges that were enough to maybe compare to a really heavy period or a difficult period, and to kind of stop me in my tracks. And I was on all fours just swaying, and we both began to cry at the same time. And it was like all together, my family was in our bed, and we were accepting that this baby was going to make its way out of me. And I remember having a lot of fear, not knowing how big my son would be. It felt very different to birth a full-term baby and anticipate that than to birth a baby that I was expecting to be about the size of my palm or my hand. And so I remember that was one thing that I was expressing to him. Like, I'm scared. Like, I don't know how big this baby is going to be. And that scared me. But we labored in my bed and in my bathroom, and set up my son with a movie, and he was running in and out, and it was a little bit chaotic, but it felt very, I was very comfortable with it just being us three and just being together. And I was laboring in a way that I could catch anything that was coming out of my body, because I didn't want to miss my baby's body, Noah's body. And so I sat on the toilet because I was having a lot of pressure and bowel movements, and I was kind of cupping underneath myself to catch anything. And my waters actually released, which was very shocking. And I remember it gave me a sense of like awe and peace. Like, my body knows exactly what it needs to do to help my son release, because his time here is done. And so I just remember like my waters released and the clear amniotic fluid fell out of me, and I looked at it and I came onto the floor, because I knew like within the next few surges, I just had like the overwhelming sense like our baby's gonna come out. So I called my husband in, and I caught him into a towel and a bowl, and we just took in our son. And he was much smaller than what we thought he would be based on how far along I was. And so it also gave me this immediate sense of peace that he wasn't just kind of in the in-between of my womb anymore, but he could pass through where he needed to go, because his home and my body was like no longer serving its purpose. So after I passed him, I continued to bleed a lot, probably more than most people would feel comfortable with in terms of even full-term birth and the clotting that I was experiencing. But I just felt, I felt fine. I felt stable. I didn't feel lightheaded. And I just kept telling my husband, like, I'm okay. I just need you to do all the things so I can lay down and shower. And we preserved our son's body. And I shared with my midwife, we experienced and shared photos of him, and she sent a beautiful blessing over him, kind of sent some practical advice. Some of that, which I always mention, because in birth and in miscarriage, we assume there are specific metrics of safety and not safety, or normal and not normal. And the more I serve women and hear women's stories, it's such a spectrum of what's normal and what the mom intuitively feels is okay or not for her. And some of the practical advice she gave was like, if you bleed more than this much in this amount of time, like, I'm going to recommend you, go to the emergency room or go get a shot of Pitocin. And I was like, there is not a chance in hell I'm leaving my bed this evening unless I am passing away, which is not going to happen because this is a sadly normal life event that my body knows how to do. And so I bring that up in my story because I think we've been so primed to fear our bodies that especially in the instance when our baby's passing before we thought is normal or okay, we can really fall into a state of fear and then go to people who are going to fix us or save us when it's not always necessary. So we climbed into bed and I was very thankful to still be nursing my son because I knew that him nursing would kind of help my womb contract and blood vessels close off and just kind of help my body finish what it needed to do in terms of bleeding and releasing. And so he had already gone down for the evening. And so I brought him into bed with me and let him nurse and went to sleep. I reached out to some family and they expressed a lot of fear of me not going to the hospital and essentially not calling on the medical system to save me, even though I was completely okay in terms of physically speaking. That's my story. I don't know if there are specific questions I can share about that, but that was Noah's birth experience, and I can speak a little bit to the immediate postpartum too.
Thank you for sharing all of that. I know how hard it can be to relive it and go step by step and share that. And I also know how healing it can be at the same time, sharing that with other people and knowing like the comfort. I think that's the comfort you can give other moms being like, oh,
yeah,
me. Like,
yeah,
me too. And I also think that you're just so right that we are cornered into fear in pregnancy and in birth, and especially when death is invited into that. And totally. It's not looked at as something that's normal, even though it is another life event. There's nothing that we do to make this happen. And there also doesn't need to be anything we need to do to complete the process. Like our bodies and our babies, just like live birth, have the capabilities to complete that process without intervention. And I love that you guys were able to do it in the comfort of your home together as a family, because that brings a lot of healing for everybody. I can imagine how, even though your son was only two, there's still a lot that he was able to take in and process with you guys. Maybe not cognitively explain it with you, like, I know what's going on, but spiritually and emotionally, he got to be a big brother in that moment and support his mom, support his little brother. And I feel like that just is a circle that doesn't get completed in so many families. And so I'm very grateful to be able to hold this space and witness your story, because that is absolutely beautiful, brutal, and thank beautiful.
You. Those are two great words to describe it. Yeah, there's so much I could say to what you just shared, but speaking to the part of siblings and younger siblings, and we had been talking to him about this baby from day one, really, and he kind of would play with my belly and kind of, you know, maybe get it, but not quite in terms of like consciously understanding. But there was so much he understood in his heart. And even in the moments when we were taking in Noah's body after I passed him, my son actually ran into the bathroom. And I remember having this like moment of, oh my gosh, like, do we shield him from what we're currently doing? Or in an age appropriate way, do we just kind of invite him in to what's happening? And we did. We just said, like, this is your baby brother, and he's with Jesus now. And this is him. Like, he was here and he's not. And of course he didn't respond. He was more concerned about like, is mom okay? Like, what's she been doing in the bathroom? And like, why are you on the floor? And those things. But my husband and I both like have deep conviction that children can be a part of birth in these events and even death in a way that is helpful for them to digest it. And I know, like, I've had conversations with friends who they also shared with their older children, maybe like their 4, 5, 6 year olds they were expecting, and were criticized by family members, like, well, what if you lose this baby? Like, what are you going to say to your older children? And I think that that comment is like a wonderful example, unfortunately, of how our culture fears death and doesn't see it as a life passage and wants to shield it from the innocent, because it is brutal and it's beautiful and it's something to understand and accept. And this friend I'm thinking of was like, I'm going to tell my son that their sibling is inside of me because it is a life. I'm not going to ignore this life's existence to the rest of part of my family, my children, because it's uncomfortable to possibly explain that that life is not with us. I find that way of thinking to be such a disservice to the dignity of children in the womb. Like, we're so afraid of you possibly dying that we won't acknowledge you yet. That feels very wrong for me. Yeah.
Thank you. And I feel like disservice is such a right word, because it's not only disservicing that life, because it's still mm-hmm. life. Doesn't matter how many weeks it has, you know, been in your womb for, it's still a life and it deserves to be celebrated. And then it's also a disservice to those children, because then they grow up in this world thinking that death doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Death only happens to the old and the sick. Mm-hmm. I was that child that thought that. And then you go through it, a life-shaking event of a death that happens to somebody who's not old and who's not sick. Mm-hmm. And it's almost impossible to process. But if we're able to invite children into this sacred space of death at a young age, we do them the service of letting them know, yes, this is part of the life cycle. And mm-hmm. it hurts because we're the people left behind without them. Mm-hmm. And it's also really beautiful because this was their version of a complete life. And we get to celebrate that complete life mm-hmm. in whatever way we feel is honorable to them. And to have like a space, I'm just thinking of us personally, like to have a space in our home for those lives that have passed too soon or mm-hmm. just passed in general is so important to us, because we want our son to grow up knowing these people who I believe that he knows spiritually. I believe we're all connected spiritually, and especially family. Like, he knows them. And so to be able to see a picture of them physically is such a gift. And so being able to see his little brother, not in the form that anybody expected to meet him in, right? Mm-hmm. And that was something you shared, that was one of your fears. And I can 100% relate to that fear. Mm-hmm. But by accepting that that was his form, we get to complete a process of like seeing him and honoring him and holding him and feeling more complete in this chaotic mm-hmm. experience that we have been thrown into.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to say two things. One was what we did with our son's body and how we invited my son into that. And then also speak to the spiritual knowing of siblings, because they're the only people that inhabit your womb, whether before or after one another. And I think there's something beautiful to that. But we decided to bury my son on family property. And I have family that has like a large amount of farm property, and we planted a tree and had a very short, I guess you could call it a ceremony. It was just very nothing floofy. It was just us. And my mom was there and my son was there as well. Of course, being a 2-year-old wanting to run around. And I hesitate to share this because I know it makes other people uncomfortable, but we found it to be very funny. So that's why I share it, because there is just the reality of life and grief and death. But as we were kind of standing, reading a letter we wrote to our son, Noah, who had passed, were holding our first son, Ezra, and he threw his shoe into the hole that we were burying his brother in. And we have all of this on video. And in the moment, like, everyone's weepy and emotional, and it just totally broke the atmosphere in like a way that sometimes you must laugh when you're in the depths of tragedy, because like your body can only handle so much. And we still like giggle about that today. And I know that that might feel weird to others, but we think back, we're like, we get to be like, you were a part of this ceremony and you were also two in your full humanity as a 2-year-old, and you saw like a hole or something to throw your shoe in and you did it. That like, I'm grateful that he was there for that, and that he was himself and we didn't force him to be something. He was just there running around, feeling probably the atmosphere and the emotions of it, and being a part of it. And I've also, to talk to the womb part, thought deeply about this baby Noah that we lost, which is a phrase I hate. Like, we didn't lose him, we know where he was and where he went, but he knew Ezra in a way that even I won't know Ezra, because they shared my body as a home and my blood, and Ezra's cells that were left behind in my body Noah experienced. And to me, that is absolutely supernatural and beautiful. And also how I feel about this baby inside of me for this third pregnancy is that the timing of this life wouldn't happen, wouldn't exist without losing Noah, unfortunately. And that was something that I struggled with in this early third pregnancy I'm currently carrying, because it was hard to fathom that the womb, the tissue, the blood, the cells that Noah touched and was inside of and sustained him, now there was a new baby in, and I didn't necessarily feel ready for that, to intellectually accept that, but spiritually it felt so significant and beautiful. So I just wanted to share that, because I don't hear that spoken of very often in terms of siblings and being in the womb together, which no one else can say they've done but siblings.
I love that. I'm very grateful that you shared that, not only for like putting that in perspective for thinking of my children, but also thinking of my sibling, mm-hmm. who I've, again, I don't like the word lost either, because it's like they just died. I know that. But mm-hmm. lost feels, I think, more comfortable to share with people.
It does.
I feel like it makes me be like, they're probably more comfortable with that, which
yeah.
is kind of, but
why do we do that? Why do we do that?
Yeah, we were just culturally trained to do that, I think.
Yeah.
People pleasing as women mm-hmm. too. We could probably go down a rabbit hole with why we do that.
Yes.
But yeah, I really appreciate that, because I think that there is so much more to the spiritual level of everything that we get so conditioned out of. And so we can bring our children back into that at a young age and like not condition them out of that, but mm-hmm. allow them to thrive in that and like grow in that is so beautiful. So thank you for mm-hmm. sharing that.
Of course.
Yeah, I would love to hear as much as we can just a little bit about like your postpartum and like what parenting looked like after that, because I know that that's a unique experience as well. I also don't want to take up all of your time, so just as much as you can and are willing to share.
Yeah, I was incredibly blessed that we don't have any family near us in terms of in even the same city or the adjacent cities, but a few hours away my mom and sister live. And so the evening that Noah passed out of me, I shared with them what was happening. They kind of had a sense what was going on, but I was like, it did happen and we are devastated and we probably need your help, because I'm bleeding and recovering and emotionally trying to process what just happened. And my wonderful son is jumping on me and he needs support too. And so they came actually the next morning, which was just incredible. And they were here. They live 3 hours away and they were here at like 8 or 9 a.m. and they stayed for several days and just like cooked for us and cleaned up our home and played with my son and just having their presence in our home deeply impacted me in the immediate postpartum. And these are women who certainly don't understand my choices in avoiding the medical system when it comes to maternity care, or wanting to have my children at home, or not rushing to the doctor when I'm bleeding or something's going on. Yet it's my sister and my mother. They were there for me. And so I was very moved by that. And having just feminine presence in my home meant a lot as well for me to have, and even for Drew, my husband, to have. Women are just so powerful in a healing sense, and can carry emotion and intuition in such a different way than men. And so I was like, just thankful to have family. And then parenting Ezra after the immediate postpartum, it felt like I had to make a conscious and intentional choice to kind of snap into reality, I guess you could say. I don't know if that's the right word. Dad is back to work, and it's you and me, buddy. And we've got to make meals and go outside and live, be in the world. I felt like I really wanted to take it easy on my body. And I remember just being like, goodness, you're heavy, or I'm not ready to exercise, like, you know, exercise in a way that I normally would to feel strong, but I'm carrying around like a 35 pound toddler, and we're going to the park and you want to run. And that felt very difficult physically for me to be ready to do that. Even once I was like done bleeding and kind of closing the, I guess, miniature postpartum I had from the miniature birth that I experienced. And then emotionally, it felt very difficult to feel grief and despair and have your little son like bring you trains and want to do trains, or just like read stories over and over, you know, be a child. And or if he's having a tantrum or meltdown, I'm like, I'm the adult. Like, I'm here to help teach you how to regulate. And I am not regulated. I'm not, I don't want to be regulated right now. Like, I'm struggling. And so there was just lots of texting my husband, texting Drew, like when he was at work, like, this is happening and it's so hard for me. And there's nothing you can do to like fix it or change it or take it away. But like just sharing that with him, sharing that with close mom friends I had of, this is what I'm walking through. It's also interesting to grieve and parent your toddler and also have people forget that you're in grief still, because they're like, well, you have a son, like you have your son here with you, like go be happy, like go be happy, go raise him, go take him places. And feeling kind of really isolated and alone in that experience, with the exception of other mothers who've walked through losing a child, because they understand it in just a different way, which makes me very thankful for social media and online communities, as toxic as they can become, because I wouldn't be able to connect with you, for example, or other moms who are living a shared experience in another state, or even in a different life stage, who have walked through it. Parenting was very difficult in the midst of grief. I definitely have memory, like just different pinpoints in my brain of crying and playing. Just like, I'm going to sit here and cry. If you notice my tears, we'll talk about it. If you don't, that's fine.
I relate to all of that. And even reaching out to your husband and being like, I know you can't fix this or change this. And to be honest, I don't want you to. I just need you to like witness mm-hmm. me and hold space.
Yeah. Just know me in this way. Yes.
Know me and see me. Like, don't fix it, which mm-hmm. I feel like is really hard for our men to do for us, especially that when we're at home with our kids and they're out working and providing in that sense, and we're providing mm-hmm. at home. I can imagine how hard that is to witness it without having a mm-hmm. fix.
Yes.
But I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Like, just know this is really hard for me, and this is what I need at the end of the day when you're home. Or
wow, I feel like I could talk to you so for so long because we do have a lot in common.
There's so many stories we can go to.
The timelines and just even the mindsets around things and the support in our lives and stuff like that. Is there anything that you want to add before we end that we haven't touched on?
I was thinking briefly when just talking about our spouses, like intimacy after loss, which can also be an entire episode. But I think that I want to share like a little bit about that in terms of grief and parenting, because I was so startled by the experience of miscarriage, because I didn't like get a medical diagnosis at a scan and was like waiting for my baby to pass. Like I was just living my life, and then I noticed bleeding, and then it increased and my baby passed. And I'm very thankful that it happened that way. But because of that, there was not a lot of emotional prep that could have happened. And I don't necessarily think I would have wanted that anyway, because I think that there's a lot of trauma and grief that gets exacerbated before the passing happens, before the miscarriage happens. But because of how startled I was from my miscarriage, I remember texting friends who I knew had had miscarriages before me and feeling like, I am so sorry. I had no idea this is what it was like in terms of the physical experience of bleeding and clotting and being literally postpartum with not holding a baby. That was very shocking. And those are the same friends I was texting about intimacy. Like, when were you ever like ready to have your body be intimate with your husband again? That was all intertwined in the day-to-day parenting of the toddler and our like being at the park and my friend texting and like us finally having availability at the same time to have that conversation and just like asking questions from other women of when did you feel ready and what was it like for you the first few times to connect with your husband after this baby had passed out of you. And for me, like I've mentioned earlier, like my womb just felt like so sacred because that was the last place Noah was. And it was so hard to fathom like inviting anything into that. And so that could be a whole nother episode. But if anyone is listening to this and struggling with that, I think that's another unseen part of early pregnancy loss, especially when your body is physically prepared to have another baby. Your cycle is back, but you are mentally and spiritually and emotionally catching up with what that might mean. But yeah, I won't open that can of worms anymore because we can go deep into that.
There really are so many layers, and so many mm-hmm. of those layers are unseen until it's experienced by you.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the hardest parts about grief is like, you can try to support somebody as much as you possibly can, but we can never actually jump into their lived experience and see all of those layers that go into the day-to-day of mm-hmm. learning how to live again after this life-altering loss.
That's so well said. Yes. Yes.
Thank you so much, Lauren. I appreciate just all your willingness to share and your ability to articulate such an unimaginable thing to go through, because even to relive it while talking about it is triggering for us. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful that you were willing to go there with us and share this with other women, because it's healing. People need it. So thank you. Yeah,
absolutely. I know that that's what I needed, and that's why I do share. And I felt called to share almost immediately after. But it was so healing to hear other women's experiences and the spectrum mm-hmm. of that and the emotions of it, because it is unseen until you're in it. And so stories is how we keep our baby's memory alive, and we can help each other heal as we're walking through it. So I'm so honored to share. Thank you for having me on and inviting me into your space. I love what you're doing.
Thank you. And we will have all of Lauren's contact in the show notes. So reach out to her. She is active on Instagram. That's where we connected. And all the things she shares are just relatable and also very educational. I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mama, for sitting here in the conversation with Lauren and I. I know it's not always easy to hold space and bear witness to these stories, and there can be so much healing found in them. So I just want to thank you. If you want to work with Lauren, I have posted her links in the show notes. And as always, Mama, I am here as well. Work with me. Let's get healthier together and be the best versions of ourselves that we know we deserve and desire to be. Thank you for joining Begin Again, Mama. I am grateful you chose to spend time with me. I know how busy you are and how precious your time really is. If you like this podcast, I invite you to subscribe or follow on your desired platform. And when you do, please rate and review Begin Again, Mama. This helps me expand our reach. Until next time, remember, each moment is an opportunity to start anew and begin again, Mama.